Morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Wednesday. It's June 9th, 57 degrees here in Old Town Park City. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Adam Carroll. Good morning.
Good morning. And we're still like on the mild side today again, but we had clear skies compared to yesterday's cloud cover here to start off. And yesterday we were a little bit milder thanks to those clouds. But the predicting is that we're starting to see the increase of south to southwest winds today. And the western side of the state, not the Wasatch Front, but the western side of the state's under a wind advisory because this cold front that we've been talking about all week is getting closer and it will arrive tomorrow morning here through northern Utah. So as it does get closer, it really will start to crank those south to southwest winds. And so that will be a problem with regards to firefighting, especially the East Canyon fire that broke out yesterday here up in Morgan County. And though right now conditions are pretty okay to fight that fire and to get that as much as under control as possible, as we progress into the afternoon hours, it really will crank up those winds. And we're going to see upwards of 45 mile per hour gusts at times. And almost everyone in the state is under a red flag warning today, including the Wasatch Back. So those winds are going to get gusty here this afternoon, and it's very important to stay vigilant out there, especially if you're going to be out and about or planning on doing any type of camping because of that reason. Now, tomorrow we will see a significant cool down after a high temperature of 78 in Park City today. We'll only be 63 tomorrow, and we'll see much cooler overnight lows beginning as soon as tomorrow morning in the upper 40s. And then on Friday morning will be in the upper 30s. So we're going to actually have some nice welcomed relief here for both Thursday and Friday as temperatures will be on the cooler side. But it's not going to last very long. We'll see more sunshine. But unfortunately, we've got a big heat dome coming back into play. And we're going to heat right back up heading into the weekend with upper 80s. And eventually we'll be hitting 90 degrees maybe as soon as Monday. If not Monday, it'll be definitely Tuesday. And we're going to stay that way through Wednesday as hundreds return to the Wasatch Front. So we've got more excessive heat on the way and not much besides tomorrow and Friday relief in sight.
Okay. Hey, thanks.
You bet.
KPCW News Time now, 8:08. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It is the KPCW Local News Hour. Stay tuned. We're scheduled to check in with Summit County Fire Warden Bryce Boyer with an update on fire restrictions that are going into effect June 16th. Later on, Leisure Learning Coordinator Jane Toley with a preview of classes being offered for our local youth this summer. South Summit Trails Foundation Board Member Corey Dutton with details about a new trail that was built in the Uinta Mountains in partnership with the U.S. Forest Service. And finally, Summit County Health Department Director Rich Bulla with a monthly update. Stay tuned. Well, Wasatch Fire District is implementing countywide fire restrictions effective June 16th. The forecasted weather conditions and ongoing drought have prompted the decision. It applies to all municipalities in the county and unincorporated areas. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has more.
The fire district will issue the directive in collaboration with Utah Forestry Fire and State Lands. It includes no open fires of any kind except with established public facilities in improved campgrounds, picnic areas, or permanently constructed fire pits at private homes where running water is present. Smoking is limited to enclosed vehicles, trailers, or buildings. It is allowed in developed recreation sites or while stopped in vegetation-free paved areas. The restriction does not allow using fireworks, tracer ammunition, or other devices, including exploding targets. There is no cutting, welding, or grinding metal in areas of dry vegetation. An approved spark arrestor is required if you want to operate a motorcycle, chainsaw, ATV, or other small internal combustion engines. The Wasatch Fire District is interested in hearing from community members with issues and questions about the restrictions. You can call them at 435-940-9636. Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
KPCW News Time now, 8:11. Well, dry, hot, windy conditions are the worst thing imaginable for firefighters this time of the year. And as a result of all of those conditions, we've seen a fireworks ban go into effect and a number of fires burning across the state. On the phone with an update from Summit County, I have Summit County Fire Warden Bryce Boyer. Good morning, Bryce.
Good morning, Leslie.
So what is the fire danger out there here in Summit County?
As of for today, there is a red flag warning issued like yesterday. But weather, it's kind of fluctuating a little bit. but running mostly in the high to very high at this point.
Yeah, so you're out there changing the fire condition signs?
Yes, I am today. We have a number of them, about eight of them throughout the county, mostly on the east side that I deal with. And then I've been in communication with the Park City Fire District, as well as a number of the HOAs that have the signs that have gotten a hold of me or provided an email so that I can keep them updated as we change the fire danger signs that are posted throughout the county. It's kind of done on a collaborative with the county, the state, U.S. Forest Service, and BLM so that they're all the same message going out to the community. So if you're watching like the Northern Utah Fire Center's website and it may say extreme or something for a day or two, typically it takes a multiple day change in what that fire danger level is, so we're not trying to get people out swapping signs back and forth on a daily basis.
All right. So how dry is it out there?
It is starting to get very dry. Higher elevations are actually showing dead fuels and so on are the lowest in several years. So like your heavy down logs and so on are drier than they've been for a very long period of time. Grasses, as we're in June, the cheatgrass and so on, also known as June grass because that's when it cures out, is starting to cure out in some areas of the county. It's more cured in other areas, which are the fine fuels. One of the benefits is that with the lack of moisture this year, we didn't get a very good growth in that. So that should help on the fire side of slowing or not having as heavy of the load of the fuel out there to burn. So it should, without a wind event, should make suppression a little easier. The real concern is as we've had these above record temperatures and below normal precip and the low snow levels this winter, is that as things are warming up and drying out, the higher elevations up in the timber and so on could see more fire activity if a fire were to start.
So Wasatch County Fire District has implemented countywide fire restrictions effective June 16th. That sounds like Summit County is doing the exact same thing.
Yes. We were in coordination with Utah State Forestry, Wasatch County, as well as Duchesne, Daggett, Uinta counties, the whole northeast area. And I was in communication with elected officials and fire districts here in Summit County. And the decision was made that based on the temperatures, the wind conditions, fuel conditions, that we would look at going with Wasatch County at the same time so that it's consistent with the public on fire restrictions.
All right. So the restrictions, I mean, are large. I mean, no open fires of any kind unless they're within a an established facility or permanently constructed fire pits?
Correct, with water on site. And no cutting, grinding, welding, torch work. It will include fireworks in that as well when we go into that restriction, and it sounds like that should be on June 16th.
Okay. And we've also seen fires start just with people target practicing. Is that outlawed as well?
Yes. So on June 12th, Utah Division of Wildlife Resources is closing down a number of their target shooting areas, one of which affects us here in Summit County, would be the Echo Canyon area at the I-80-84 junction. They will be posting it as a no target shooting. I believe they're also going to follow suit with the no campfires in that area and no fireworks, which fireworks are not allowed on state and federal land at any time.
Right, and that was just issued yesterday, Governor Cox issuing that firework ban for state land and unincorporated land. But that means that what, all municipalities then have to ban fireworks on their own?
That is correct. By the way, the state laws are written, municipalities or cities are responsible for their own jurisdictional areas.
Okay, and I guess you would encourage all municipalities to follow suit here, though.
They need to look at where it makes sense to, you know, if they have some green areas and so on, parks or that kind of stuff. They may want to look at allowing in specific areas where it doesn't threaten, you know, the hillsides and the drier vegetation.
When we first attempted to contact you yesterday, we had heard that you were assisting with the East Canyon fire in Morgan County. How so?
We had sent, they had requested through Weber Dispatch, North Summit Fire District, and I. So I had gone over to help with logistics and operations, just directing, keeping track of crews, and overseeing or working with our county units to make sure that they had what they needed and documentations and so on were in place for them assisting on that fire.
So will you be back helping today?
At this point, because of the red flag warning, talking with the incident commander on that, I will be in the county available to deal with any news starts that we may get, but depending on what their fire behavior becomes today, I am still available to go over and assist them with that, with whatever they may need.
So yesterday we had reported that the fire was kind of headed towards Summit County. How close is it?
It's still about 12 to 15 miles from crossing into Summit County, it looked like, with the rough mapping that was done last night. They'll be working today to get a more accurate. Most of that area of the county where it would be coming into is more open land, range land, and so on. Not really any infrastructure or anything that would be threatened until it got probably another 18 miles or so from where it's actually burning into the Hennifer area.
State fire information has said that this is a human-caused fire, however, still under investigation. Do we have any idea? I mean, are we talking a campfire, target practice, something like that?
At this point, it's under the investigation. The fire investigator was up yesterday doing some investigation on it, but it did not look to be like a campfire-type thing, but I can't really say what they had found.
Okay. All right, Bryce, anything else you'd like to tell our listeners?
Just if people are out and they are having campfires or anything, even in the improved pits, to make sure that they're totally extinguished and cold to the touch before they leave them. A lot of times we find that people will come up in the recreation areas or homes or cabin areas, have a campfire, think they have it out, leave, and then we get called because it's rekindled, it's escaped that area and causes a larger fire. So make sure if you are having any kind of a campfire that it is cold out to the touch.
Okay. Bryce, good luck for the rest of the summer. My goodness.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And hopefully people will be safe out there and have good sense about fire use.
Okay. That's Summit County Fire Warden Bryce Boyer. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW News Time Now, 820. KPCW News Time Now, 821. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Park City Community Education Department offering classes for kids this summer. In the studio to tell us about some of them, I have Park City School District Leisure Learning Coordinator Jane Tolley. Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's see. This is all about kids for the summer courses?
For the most part, we have a few adult classes. We have a motorcycle training class coming up this Saturday. But for the most part, it's for kids.
Okay. And that's actually the motorcycle class required for kids to take, huh?
This is for adults. And what that does is it gives you the enough training that when you go to get your motorcycle license, you don't need to do the driving part. So I actually put my husband through this class.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And you also have a couple of language classes that you're going to be offering as well. Stacy Domalski sounds like she'll be teaching a couple of publishing classes as well for adults, and then Pilates. But let's take a look at some of the classes for kids. Are things selling out at this point?
We have a few spaces, but we have enough kids to make it go. So our classes are typically 12 or less, depending on the age. We like to keep them small. Our babysitting class this Friday is sold out. So they are selling out, yes.
Okay, we got a few more of those babysitting classes as well.
We do.
Yeah. Tell me about how are the classes going to be held? I mean, are there COVID...
We are following the guidelines, so, you know, you can wear a mask or not wear a mask. Our teachers are vaccinated, and they're ready to see the kids and have some fun.
Okay. So a lot of them are held at schools, local schools?
For the most part, they're all at Ecker Hill or Parley's Park.
Okay. Well, then give us some of the highlights that you think kids might be interested in.
You know, for next week, we have Fairyland Fantasy. That's really popular. We have just a few spots for that. Chef School, super popular, where the kids learn to cook and all the basic safety rules in the kitchen and some health rules. And we have a sewing class. We haven't done that for a long time. It's for grades 6 and up. And it's with Asia Martin, who, you know, she's pretty good artist. Like, she can make jewelry, she can sew, she's fantastic. We have some of the old tested and true and popular ones, like digital movie making is back this year. So we haven't had that for a couple of years. Kids bring their digital movie cameras, and then we have a filmmaker, Carla Woodmansey, who is also a professor at Weber State and works with Sundance, that comes up and teaches the kids how to put a storyline together and edit their movies. And, you know, those are skills they can take forward with them forever.
Sure, sure. The ages are, I mean, you start them, as young as 3 and a half?
Yes. Yes, and they're really popular. So if you have a 3.5-year-old, you know, jump in online and get your kiddo registered, because I think we're really one of the only places in town that are offering classes for kids that young.
Right, and then from there on, I mean, it's kind of ages 3.5 to 5, and then you go into the actual grades, like kindergarten or 1 to 3, 2 to 4 grades?
Yeah.
So try to keep kids about the same age together.
Yeah, well, the curriculum changes for their ages.
Okay, let's talk about some of the others that you've got as well.
We have some new classes. We have a lot of Lego classes with Snapology. They're a new partner. And we have Little Zoologist is new.
And what's that about?
It's helping kids learn to identify species, and they learn about species that are on the endangered list and how conservation efforts can get them off the endangered list. We also have a new one, Shark Week. It's going to be super fun.
Okay.
I tried to time that with, you know, Discovery Channel Shark Week, but it didn't quite line up. And we have Crazy for Cookies. That's a new chef school, and street foods, where you cook foods from, like, that you would get on a food truck. Super delicious. And let's see, what else do we have new? Just some new Art Haven. Art Haven's a partner of ours out of Spanish Fork, and their curriculum is fantastic. You know, the work that the kids do, it's just so clever and creative and darling. It's fun. It's fun to see the kids in that class.
Okay. So did you mail out brochures then of the compass to?
I did. Okay. So we mailed the brochure in May. And if you didn't get one, you can call me at 435-615-0215. And I can email you one or mail you one. They're also available at the libraries. I can also send like a digital version as well.
Okay. And I also see that you're doing Camp Invention, but that's not you. Is that, again, another partner?
It's a partner, and it's going on right now. So that's super popular. I think there's 76 children in that. So they have, you know, multiple teachers. And that's going on at Parley's Park right now, along with To the Stars and Beyond and Spa Day. We also have Little Carpenters and Kids Carpentry that we brought back. We haven't had that for a long time, but Jason Jensen with the Eccles Center is teaching that, and he has a degree in stagecraft and set design. So, you know, I feel really fortunate to have him teaching for us. It's hard to get somebody who can teach those kind of wood skills.
Yeah. To young kids, right?
Yeah, and he's our guy. I went to see him the other day, and he was completely prepared. I'm sure the kids are having a blast right now.
All right. So how did Community Ed kind of survive through the pandemic?
Well, you know, we pivoted. It happened in March of 2020, and a lot of the classes were canceled, and it was sad. And then last year in the summer, we pivoted and all the classes were online, but they're limited, you know, after the school year and everybody doing learning from home. It was tough. And we didn't publish a brochure. We did digital brochures, but it made it through, you know. And with the help of Danny Lafuedo, who opened a Pilates studio during COVID. You know, I got to hand it to her. And it's interesting with Danny is she started with Pilates through the Compass and just loved it and went on to, you know, become certified and opening her own studio in Silver Creek. So we pivoted. We had some classes online. And then with the fall classes and everything going on in the schools and, you know, the focus was really on the students learning and, you know, getting them back, and it was scary, you know, because we didn't know with the pandemic what was going to happen. So a lot of our classes were virtual, and the community really came together and supported our teachers and did virtual classes, and it was fantastic. We had very limited kids' classes after school. But this year, we're hoping to get back with our partners like Youth Theater and, you know, Kimball Arts and do some after-school kid classes and then back to in-person classes for the languages. Because it's really hard to have a language class with masks on. So we switched to online classes.
Yeah, so that is the plan, though, to bring back classes this fall in person.
Yes, depending on where we are with the pandemic. We're following all of the rules and the guidelines and the science and watching the counts, and we just want everybody to stay safe and learn. You know, that's our whole thing.
Yeah, and I was one of those that took some language classes during the pandemic, thinking, well, what else have I got to do? And my thought is that many of the people there liked the online format because they didn't have to drive in, or, you know, I mean, it
right.
kind of saved them that much extra studying time, right?
So, yes.
So is there some talk about keeping them via Zoom? Or
We've talked about that. I also have students who didn't opt in on the pandemic thing because it's a really, you know, we got a social thing where people just want to be around people and see their face. So, you know, I'm going to take that into consideration. I have a Spanish conversation class going right now that's virtual, and we got a ton of people, and, you know, they've expressed the same sentiments to me that, you know, online works for them. So we'll see what we can do. We might do both.
Okay. I know that you're always looking for people who are interested in teaching. So if somebody does feel like they've got something, they just need to contact you?
Yes. And can I tell you my email address? It's jtoley, so J-T-O-L-Y, at pcschools.us.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
You know, I just want to mention to everybody, sign up early. I feel bad when our classes are full because the classes are so small that it's disappointing for me to have to put somebody on a wait list or, you know, or cancel when somebody really wanted to join the class. There's a minimum and a maximum, so that's kind of how this program works.
Okay. Hey, Joan, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
It's Jane Tolley is the Park City School District Leisure Learning Coordinator. You're listening to the local news hour here on KPCW Newstime Now, 833. KPCW Newstime Now, 833. Good morning. Well, the Slate Creek Mountain Bike Trail set to open on Saturday. On the phone with an update from the South Summit Trails Foundation, I have board member Corey Dutton. Good morning, Corey.
Good morning.
So tell us about the Slate Creek Trail.
We are very excited to unveil this new 5-mile loop that we've been able to build in the Uinta National Forest. It will be the first dedicated mountain bike trail in the Uinta Case Wasatch National Forest. So we're super excited.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like there's many bike trails on Forest Service property. Did it take any kind of special permission?
It doesn't. It's really a grade thing. You know, the steeper the grade, the more unsuitable for mountain biking it becomes. And the trails up in the National Forest tend to be not well maintained, and because there's just lack of resources. And so that's another issue. When you've got big, huge boulder fields and, you know, fallen trees, it's pretty hard to ride your bike on that stuff.
All right. So where is this located? I mean, if somebody was to drive into the Uintas.
Definitely. With all the trails being so overcrowded in Park City, we've seen a ton of people coming already to ride the new trail. It's going to be the first trailhead on the left. It's the Yellow Pine Trailhead. As you go up Mirror Lake Highway to enter the National Forest, it will be the very first trailhead on the left after you go through Samick. And you can Google Yellow Pine Trailhead and it'll take you straight there. That's where the Beaver Creek, actually, it's called the Scenic Byway Trail, but a lot of people call it the Beaver Creek Trail, comes out of there.
Ah, okay. And do you plan to expand that trail at all? I mean, is there more room to do another loop or something? Or
absolutely. We have a master trail plan that Doug Evans, who's on our board, created for us together with the U.S. Forest Service. And our plan is to have almost 50-mile trail system up there, a single-track trail system.
Oh, why? So that's over, what, the next 5-10 years?
Exactly. We're working on phase two right now and approvals with the U.S. Forest Service, which will extend the 5-mile loop to another almost 9 miles. And that we would break ground on that next spring, so in spring of 2022. So super excited about that.
Okay. And so what kind of trail is it? I mean, is it for intermediate riders, beginner riders, or?
It's both a hiking trail and a mountain bike trail. And for mountain bikers, it's a directional loop that goes clockwise. And then the hikers can go counterclockwise to avoid any user conflicts. But it is, I would say it's an intermediate trail. There are some elements to it that you could take it to the next level and do some advanced riding, but I would take a beginner on that trail, to be honest.
Okay. So was it built by volunteers?
It was 100% built by the U.S. Forest Service volunteers, and then we actually were able to contract with an incredible trail builder who's grown quite famous in Utah, Bob Radke, of Creative Trails. Bob is famous for a lot of trails in Utah, but one in the Camas Valley at the High Star Ranch Trail. He is responsible for a lot of that handiwork up there. One in particular is called the Radke Trail, his namesake, and it has gotten a ton of publicity all over Utah. We've had riders coming from all different counties just to ride that trail at the High Star Ranch. So we're hoping we'll draw those same types of people out to our new trail.
Okay. You've got a grand opening event on Saturday. Tell us about that.
So our grand opening of the Slate Creek Mountain Bike Trail is this Saturday, June 12th at noon to 4, at the Yellow Pine Trailhead. So you're just going to go on Google Maps and search for Yellow Pine Trailhead. There is parking and a restroom there, and we are going to have Sewer, which is a Latin American, South American, Mexican food truck catered there. So bring cash. And it's just basically going to be a trail party, Leslie. We're celebrating. This is an awesome thing for us, and we're super excited about this partnership with the U.S. Forest Service.
Yeah. All right. What else is the South Summit Trails Foundation working on?
We are working on right now, as you know, the South Central, Southeastern area of Summit County has virtually no trails for people to use. All of the trails in Summit County are pretty much concentrated in one location in Park City. So the South Summit Trails Foundation, our mission is to grow an interconnected system of trails in the South Central, Southeastern part of Summit County. And Wasatch Trails Foundation is also working on building more trails in Wasatch County, just like we are. What have we got going? It's super cool. We are developing a master trail plan for the entire Camas Valley right now that will create an interconnected system of both transportation and recreation trails. So that's an exciting thing because let's face it, Leslie, I mean, as you drive down into that Camas Valley, it's so beautiful. You see all these wide open fields and farms and that agricultural sort of feel that is out there. And it's going to be a sea of houses one day. There's no question about it. We're not going to stop the developers from coming and building. But what we can do is get ahead of them with a master trails plan and get those trails set in there. So when they come in, they've got to build around that trails plan and possibly help build some of those trails.
All right. In terms of funding, how are you guys funded?
Well, the Slate Creek Mountain Bike Trail was built mostly by grants. I want to thank the restaurant tax grant from Summit County. All the restaurants in Summit County get taxed. And where does that money go? It goes to build trails. It goes to our local culture. And the restaurant tax grant, we want to thank Summit County for that. We also want to thank the Recreational Trails Program grant, which is a grant that we get from the federal government that's managed by the state. And then finally, the Park City Community Foundation, which everybody knows who's probably listening on this call. They were tremendous help in building this trail and in all of our previous trails. So I want to say thanks to those guys. And then also private donors. We have a lot of really generous private donors that are throwing $5,000 or $10,000 a pop at us. And it's just amazing. We couldn't do it without it.
Okay. So is there plenty of parking for people there at the Yellow Pine Trailhead?
Yep. There's plenty of parking there. And if they're having trouble parking, if the parking's overflowed, they can park right there on the side of the highway, on the left side of the highway there, and then just walk right up.
Okay. That grand opening of the Slate Creek Mountain Bike Trail scheduled for this Saturday, noon to 4 p.m. there at the Yellow Pine Trailhead. Hey, Corey, anything else you'd like to mention?
We're always looking for volunteers. So please, if you have some free time, and you want to do some trail work days with us and or help in any other capacity, we just lost two board members, so we'd love to hear from you. You can reach me at info@southsummittrails.org. If you'd like to donate, you love what we're doing, check us out at southsummittrails.org and just click on the donate button. We couldn't do it without our generous donors and our generous volunteers in the community.
Okay. Hey, Corey Dutton, thanks for your time this morning. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Leslie. Have a great week.
KPCW News Time now, 8:42. It's the local news hour on KPCW. Well, as part of a long agenda today, the Summit County Council will be devoting a couple of hours to reviewing the problem of affordable housing. The topic is on the council's agenda today, starting at about 1:30 this afternoon. KPCW's Rick Bruff has more.
Summit County Manager Tom Fisher said they're planning on another long session about the topic in the near future. Jeff Jones, the county's Economic Development Director, estimates that only about 39% of the local workforce lives in Summit County. Fisher said it's hard to determine, but the workforce housing problem might be a little worse since the pandemic, not just in the county, but across the nation. He said the council wants to survey the issue in the context of development and the cities in the county, especially the west side. He said they need to decide how much of the workforce they want living here and what kind of workforce.
We want to get some better direction, both to staff and to the public, you know, a conversation with the public, and then some policy determinations so that we can look at our general plan and our codes to see if it's set up correctly to produce the affordable housing we need, as well as react to that community sentiment that we don't want the place overrun with people.
Earlier this week, a groundbreaking was held for an 1,100 pillow employee housing complex in the Lower Canyons Resort area.
What is the impact of that as that starts to come online? Is there further need beyond that? Because those are large numbers, and those are that sounds like a huge thing when it comes in 1,100 beds. But we need to see what production of jobs looks like in our county, and then, of course, in migration and internal growth in respect to what goal to build a certain number of units. They've analyzed their need and their contribution to the overall effort of affordable housing. We're seeing our eastern cities are now seeing a certain amount of growth, and they have a responsibility too, but they also have the same internal struggles of communities that don't necessarily want to see certain types of growth and development or too much growth and development. So they have to make those judgments too, but I think we need to look at it as a region to really know where we want to go so that we're all playing from a similar playbook and have some contribution to that.
Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. For KPCW, I'm Rick Bruff.
KPCW News Time now, 8:44. Good morning. Joining me now on the phone with an update from the Summit County Health Department, I have Health Director Rich Bullo. Good morning, Rich. Okay, I'm going to give it one more try here, see if we've got Health Director Rich Bullo on the line. Rich, can you hear me now?
I sure can.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sounds a lot better. Thanks for bearing with us here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So let's just start where we are with the number of vaccinated residents of Summit County. I know that you've been pleased with that number.
Yeah, I've been really pleased. There's still a couple of gaps, but in the 12 and above, so everybody who is eligible for the vaccine, so 12 years and above, 83% countywide have had a first dose and 70% are complete, meaning they've either had two doses of Moderna or Pfizer or a single dose of Johnson & Johnson. And so that, you know, 70% is the number that we've been hopeful to hit for complete for the 12 and above. And we've hit there. In fact, we're probably a little bit higher than that now. That's about 20 percentage points higher than the state. In fact, it is. The state is at 63% with a first dose and 50% complete. So comparatively, we're doing quite well.
Yeah. At the same time, though, you were discussing about with so many people, outsiders, coming into Summit County, are we going to be safe?
Well, that's a really interesting debate. I think the word safe, probably the better word is safer. The denominator, you know, when we have a lot of people coming here and we talk about herd immunity, that whole concept of hitting a 70% vaccine rate, for example, is based on the idea that the denominator, the population, doesn't change. And of course, that's not the case in a community like Summit County. We've got large events on both the east side and the west side, a lot of people traveling here. I just mentioned the lower vaccine rates across the state of Utah. And so if I were a person sitting here that was not vaccinated, I would still be very concerned. This stuff is absolutely still out there. And, you know, a classic example right now is that we have a small surge going on in the eastern part of the county, and that surge is isolated to a group of people that live together. And I think that's what we're going to see more and more, is that somebody is out and about, they pick this up, they're not vaccinated, they bring it back to their household or their work site. And, because we have a relatively high vaccine rate, I think we'll be able to control those outbreaks, but we're going to continue to see them. And so what I would say, you know, breakthrough cases are quite low, actually very low, so cases in people that have been fully vaccinated. But if you've not been vaccinated, you're still absolutely at risk, and you need to think about whether or not you personally should get that vaccine.
Yeah, so will herd immunity ever be achieved in Summit County since the herd keeps changing?
You know, one thing that we haven't talked about is the fact that a fair number of people have had this stuff naturally, and so they've still got, those individuals have some level of immunity. There's still great debate on how long that lasts, but, you know, if we're looking at 70% of our population has completed vaccines, and if you add, you know, let's just pick a number and say, you know, 10% of people have a natural immunity to it because of having been exposed, and maybe they are or aren't vaccinated, we've got a rate significantly higher than 70 probably. So that's going to, again, it's going to protect us. It's going to, and herd immunity, by the way, doesn't mean that the disease isn't in the community. It means that you don't have widespread outbreaks. And I think that's generally where we're going to be. You know, the catch is going to be we need to get kids vaccinated prior to reconvening schools next year, as many as possible. And then we also, you know, if you listen to the national scientific news, there's a good chance we're going to need booster doses. And so this can't fall off. You know, this isn't a, okay, we're there, now we're done. It's an ongoing project that I think we're going to need to continue to focus on indefinitely.
Yeah, but when we look back at like the Spanish flu, I mean, I know it's not one of these, it's not the COVID virus, but at the same time, it just kind of died out. Doesn't that eventually happen with this? Are you saying it's always going to be with us?
Yeah, good question. There's still debate about that. I've been reading actually a fair amount about that. Most of the experts on communicable diseases are saying that this stuff is going to be here. It's going to be, you know, probably more similar to what we see in the seasonal flu moving forward. It is important to remind folks, though, this is significantly more deadly than the seasonal flu. And so, you know, what I would anticipate our future to be, and this is just based on, you know, me reading as much as I can about this, and it seems to be the consensus, is that at some frequency, we're going to have to be getting booster shots. There's still debate out whether or not that frequency is every year or every other year, but it's going to be something that I think we're going to need to manage. And if we don't, it will be back. And so I think that's going to be our future.
Yeah. And then when we say back, it's again with all of these different variants, that's where we run into problems. It's kind of like, well, maybe I'll just get it, but it sounds like you could get it again because it's a different variant.
Yep, that's right. Of course, that's the case with the flu as well. There are multiple strains of the flu. And I think that's going to be, you know, part of the battle of those biotech firms and pharmaceutical firms is to be trying to stay one step ahead of this. And I know that right now Pfizer and Moderna are testing booster vaccines that are specifically designed to address the most prevalent variants. And I, you know, again, science has rocked this. You know, it is remarkable how effective these vaccines are, in particular the mRNA vaccines. And I think they'll continue to do it. You know, they're not, their job isn't done. And our job as a community and a populace is not done either. I think we need to be vigilant, both with respect to safety measures, but certainly with respect to being vaccinated.
So when do you expect to hear some news about boosters? I mean, should we expect to get a booster before this winter?
You know, the news is really mixed. I was on a call with the state and CDC last week. They're saying to expect a booster, but as you've observed, there's not a lot of public news. The trials are being done, and the reason for this is that what they're watching is whether or not people are becoming reinfected. And by that, that's actually not the right word. Whether or not there are breakthrough cases. So people who are fully vaccinated who then get the disease. And they're looking at populations of people, looking at T cells, antibodies, etc., and seeing at what rate those decline. And then trying to predict immunity, basically. And the reason they don't have a clear answer right now is because we haven't been in this long enough. People have only been vaccinated since around December in large numbers. And so the information just isn't there. But I still bank really heavily on the advice of the scientific community, and in particular CDC, Dr. Fauci and others. And they are saying that probably we will be getting a booster dose sometime leading into the fall, continuing through the winter. And so that's what I'm expecting. But, you know, we've not heard definitive news yet.
And what's the latest for vaccinating children under 12?
Same deal. They're doing trials right now. Pfizer is leading the charge on this. They've really been very, I think, aggressive and effective in doing the trials. So they're actually doing trials, as I understand it, in cohorts of kids down to the age of two. And, you know, the little bits and pieces that I hear are, you know, they suggest that we're going to be vaccinating, you know, maybe not down to two, but perhaps to five or six in the fall. So generally school-age children, and I know that's their focus, is to look at school-age children and try to get those trials completed in time to have a significant impact on vaccinating those groups before school. And so we'll see. I think the picture that's in front of us is the fact that we're going to have increased vaccine efforts for children leading into the fall, and then maybe on top of that, booster doses. And so, you know, the vaccine initiatives are going to be ongoing. And I think that's what we can expect.
Yeah, so just given all of the announcements about events and summer concert series and this and that, it feels like we're back to normal. Maybe a few less people at some of these events, but for all intents and purposes, we've got large gatherings happening. You're okay with that?
You know, I am. As I've said, I'm still very concerned about people who aren't vaccinated. And those individuals are taking significant risks. They go to some of these events where you've got people traveling in particular from outside of the county. I would be uneasy if I were one of those individuals. But as we've said, you know, now for a long time, this is about managing this. It's not about eliminating COVID. It's about managing outbreaks and mitigating risk. And, you know, you look at, in particular, our vaccine rates in Summit County, people 50 and above, extraordinarily high. So, you know, we're somewhere in the ballpark of 90% complete. So those people, the people who have really been most greatly affected by this disease, are going to be quite well protected. You know, I'm going to take in a couple of events this summer. I am fully vaccinated. I'm not particularly concerned for my own health, but then again, if you're not vaccinated, you are bearing a risk. Absolutely.
Okay. Rich, I got to leave it there. Again, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, Leslie.
Summit County Health Director Rich Bullough. Anyway, in some other local news, three local nonprofit organizations are finalists for this year's Park City Community Foundation Women's Giving Fund grant finalists. Those are Eats Park City, Youth Sports Alliance, and Jewish Family Service of Utah. Members of the Women's Giving Fund will now have the opportunity to vote for the organization who they believe will best serve the women and children of Summit County. More than 1,000 members of the Giving Fund have contributed a minimum of $1,000, creating this million-dollar base, which has been invested by the Community Foundation. Interest proceeds of the fund are used to support nonprofits with a high-impact grant each summer. The final grant recipient will be announced July 6th. If you're interested in becoming a member of the Women's Giving Fund, men and children are welcome to go to parkcitycf.org. In his third executive order pertaining to the current drought, Utah Governor Spencer Cox said yesterday that fireworks will not be allowed on state-owned and unincorporated lands this year. KPCW's Michelle Deininger has more.
Saying that by all indicators, 2021 could be the state's worst drought year on record, Governor Cox issued his third drought-related executive order today, limiting watering at some state facilities to twice weekly. A previous order had allowed 3 days per week. And he also announced that effective today, no fireworks will be permitted on any state or unincorporated private lands. That order comes from the state forester and the Division of Forestry, Fire, and State Lands. No fireworks are allowed this year on the state trust lands known as SITLA either. The state allows cities and towns to make their own decisions about fireworks. Municipalities look to fire service experts for guidance, so this may impact plans for 4th of July celebrations in Summit and Wasatch County towns. KPCW will update this story as we learn more. Michelle Deininger, KPCW News.
And applications for participation in this year's 4th of July parade in Park City are now open. KPCW's Sean Higgins has that story.
Applications are open now until June 14th. Applications received after the 14th may be considered, but will be issued a late fee. No applications will be accepted after June 24th. This year's parade theme is Together Again, and applications are encouraged from local Summit County residents, businesses, and nonprofits, and are asked to represent the theme and spirit of the holiday. Applications for the parade will be considered on three criteria: whether the applicant is local to Summit County, its relevance to the spirit of Independence Day, and how promptly the application is submitted. This year's parade will take place on Friday, July 2nd, instead of the traditional 4th. The new date is an effort to scale back crowds due to lingering COVID-19 worries and a long-term desire to reduce the size of the city's summer events. Park City Economic Development Program Manager Jenny Dearson told City Council in May the city's 4th of July celebrations typically bring between 30 and 40,000 people to town throughout the weekend. Fireworks are tentatively scheduled for Sunday the 4th, but are subject to change due to weather and fire danger. Awards in several categories, including those for community spirit, crowd engagement, and environmental sustainability, will also be awarded to the parade's top entries. Application fees are $200 for a for-profit business, $100 for a nonprofit business, and $50 for individuals and neighborhoods. Late applications will cost double that fee. Entries who walk, bike, or use electric vehicles will receive a $50 discount on their fee. Political parties and candidates are not allowed in the parade. Applicants who have been accepted into the parade will begin receiving notification from the city starting June 18th. A link to the parade application can be found on our website, kpcw.org. Sean Higgins, KPCW News.
You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City. Stay tuned. We've got headline news followed by the mountain life. It's 9 o'clock.